I hope you've all had your sufficient quantity of caffeine, refined carbohydrates, nicotine, as the case may be. At this late time of the day, especially after having our minds filled with such wonderful, useful, and new information, and thought-provoking information. Please bear with me a little bit longer, and I apologize for this cold, which I've been battling for a few days now, with a scratchy voice. I am not a researcher, per se. I'm an MD. I'm trained in internal medicine and cardiology. I practice emergency medicine as the director of an ER and as the director of emergency medical services for 10 years. I have six different certifications. So I came to the Ibogaine Project with a broad-based background. In 1995, I became a full-time addictionologist, ASAMS certified, and a slight correction is that I am president-elect of the Florida Society of Addiction Medicine. I treat addicts one patient at a time. Am I an expert? Well, I don't know. But I was told I'm from out of town and I have slides, so that qualifies me. I was also told to be there, be brief, and be seated. So I will try and do that also. Having said that so far, I have followed and administered approximately over 225 dependent patients for a wide variety of addictions or dual diagnoses with the drug Ibogaine. As an MD, I have had a respectful skepticism of research that I have read in peer-reviewed journals. In 1980, for instance, I was taught that if you had a stomach ulcer, it was due to spicy foods and stress. And if somebody would have said back then there's a little bug called H. pylori that caused ulcers, they would have thought you were crazy. So I had to see things for myself. For me, as a physician, seeing was believing. And as Kismet would have it, I met Dr. Mash. And Dr. Mash said, gee, Jeff, you have a varied background. You'd be very helpful to us in our project. I said, Deborah, I have a client. He's 30-something years old. He's been on methadone at 60 milligrams a day for 7 years. Despite that, he's injecting $300 to $600 a day of intravenous heroin per day. He's tried every treatment, every miracle cure, and every standardized treatment, and quote-unquote, he cannot get through the sickness. I would like to bring him to St. Kitts, to your program, and I'd like to see him tell me that this project works. Well, Dr. Mash allowed me to bring that client. I had to see it for myself. The client took Ibogaine uneventfully. Of course, he had to be switched over to short-acting opiates because he was on methadone. And if you're interested in how that's done, please come to the workshop tomorrow morning. However, the next morning, the client explained it to me as this when I asked him, how do you feel? And he said, Dr. Campbell, the best I can say that if I was locked up in prison and I had to go through a cold turkey withdrawal, and I was suffering the agony of cold turkey, what he called the two-bucket kick. He says, the morning after Ibogaine, I am approximately 60 to 90 days ahead of the curve where I would have been otherwise. And I saw that with my own eyes. And I've been coming back and helping Dr. Mash ever since. Seeing is believing. And it is my wish that everybody here can someday see this miracle for themselves. So let's say we come across a Aladdin's lamp, or maybe the Doug Talbot lamp, or of addiction genies, and the genie comes out and says, I am going to make the perfect addiction drug for you. But you have to tell me, what do you want that drug to be? What's your wish list for the perfect addiction medicine? Well, number one, it would have to reduce or prevent withdrawal symptoms. It would have to reduce or prevent cravings. It would have to reduce or prevent relapse, both to the drug of choice and to other mood-altering substances. Because as we know, many of our clients will say, gee, I no longer do heroin, but now I drink or I smoke pot or I do whatever. We believe in a program of complete abstinence from mind-altering chemicals. We want this drug to restore normal physiologic functioning. The drug has to be safe. Minimal side effects during treatment. Even, at best, the minor stuff. The nausea, the vomiting. And certainly no major side effects. We want lower absent morbidity, and certainly we must have absent mortality. The drug has to be widely available, and it has to be economically available to all. Most importantly, this miracle drug would have to reduce or prevent the post-acute withdrawal syndrome. It's been my experience with my patients who have been neuroadapted to opiates that they don't feel well for 30, 60, 90, 120 days after treatments. They are told that, oh, detox lasts for 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. If somebody's trying to be really honest with them, they might actually tell them that they're going to be sick for 12 days. But how many of us really tell our clients, guess what? You're not going to feel really well for a few months. You will be hypervigilant. Sleep won't be normal. Your GI functions will not be normal. And we try and treat those symptoms with a plethora of different medications to alleviate those post-acute withdrawal symptoms. Certainly it's not a full-blown withdrawal, but they are annoying symptoms that stimulate craving and produce relapse in those early months of sobriety. So, in order to help with the post-acute withdrawal syndrome, that drug should have an antidepressant effect, an anti-anxiety effect, a mood-stabilizing effect, and certainly decrease craving for the drug of choice or other mind-altering chemicals. At best, that drug would be orally administered. It should have a long half-life, producing desired therapeutic effects. It should be effective for the majority of patients to take the drug. Now, reading the ASAM text, I found a quote that said, at standard, if a drug is 15 to 20% efficacious, we consider it a possible drug for the treatment in our Chinese menu of treatments for addiction. If I was a patient coming into treatment, somebody told me, we're going to treat you with this drug, and you've got a 1 out of 5 chance of that drug working for you, I would not be too enthusiastic about taking that drug. So I would like to tell that genie, I want that drug to at least be 90, 95% effective. And since this is a dream drug, I'd like the drug to be a teacher. Now we have to think outside of the box here. The drug as a teacher. Can this drug give me insight into the reason why I use the drugs? Can the drug help the client close past traumas? Can the drug work on treatment-naive patients? Patients who know nothing about the disease concept of addiction, have not been to 12-step programs, don't understand that this is not about willpower or good intentions, and will it also work on those patients who are treatment saturated? Those ones who said, yes, I've had significant clean time. I've had 12 steps rammed down my throat. I've been to X, Y, and Z, the most famous treatment centers in the country, and it doesn't work anymore. I can't get the magic back. Nothing seems to work for me. Treatment-saturated patients seem to become treatable after taking ibogaine. So what do we have available to us now? We have our agonists, codeine, hydrocodone, hydromorphone, oxycodone, etc., methadone, LAM, which is soon going to be taken off the market, fentanyl, propoxyphene, and actually heroin. We have countries that do prescribe, like in England, where clients can get heroin cigarettes, as a form of substitution therapy and harm reduction. These are all working on opiate receptor sites via mu, kappa, and delta. We have our partial agonists and mixed agonist antagonists, such as buprenorphine with the new drug Subutex. We have buprenorphine and naloxone, the Suboxone. And then we have the other partial agonists, mixed agonist antagonists, such as Stadol, Nubane, Talwin, and Revia, which is also possibly an anti-craving drug. We have our pure antagonists, Narcan, Naltrexone, Revia, and Urad. with the various Urad ultra rapid opium detox cocktails that various private companies are using now. And we have our adjuvants, which are basically used during the acute withdrawal phase and during the post-acute withdrawal phase, such as clonidine, lofexidine, and our beta blockers. And basically, we're targeting specific symptoms and trying to help the client get through those symptoms in the post-acute withdrawal phase. We have our antidepressants. And I caution people about labeling clients in the first 90 days after detox with a psychiatric diagnosis, because what client is not depressed, hypervigilant, or anxious? We have tricyclics, SSRIs, MAOs. We have our mixed serotonin and epinephrine drugs like Effexor, or people who are using Wellbutrin in combination with any other antidepressant. And for those of us who like a more holistic approach, the 5-hydroxytryptophan or hydroxytryptophan in itself. Mood stabilizers, very big anti-craving and stabilization now, with Depakote, Lamictal, Tegretol, Neurontin, Acamprosate, not available in the United States, but seems to be very well accepted in England as a drug to prevent alcohol craving. Topamax has some recent articles written about preventing alcohol craving. Lithium and Revia, here stating that it prevents alcohol craving and may possibly prevent opiate craving. And again, we have beta blockers available to us to help alleviate some of the annoying symptoms of post-acute withdrawal. We have our sedative hypnotics and our antipsychotics. Benzos, barbs, phenothiazines. Benzos are listed twice, excuse me. We have the thionobenzodiazepines and the new antipsychotics such as Zyprexa, Risperdal, etc. And the GABA selective benzos such as Ambien and Sonata, which I find do help patients sleep. I've had many patients in post-acute withdrawal tell me they haven't had a good night's sleep for 2 or 3 months. And it's that lack of sleep which frequently wears them out. They state to themselves, I'll just use one night to get one night's sleep and I'll go back to the program tomorrow, and the monster awakes and they go to full-blown relapse. Agonist affects opiates, it's all about receptor sites. And I'm running out of time, so I'm going to list mu, delta, kappa receptor sites. Important. Tolerance, dependence, and neuroadaptation are the enemy. Withdrawal and post-acute withdrawal are receptor-specific. So the goal is to use drugs which are target-specific. We wind up today using combination therapy. And when we do that, we wind up with synergistic effects causing problems. In this chart, very briefly, you'll see receptor sites that are closed circles being agonist effects and open circles being antagonist effects. And if you look at ibogaine and noribogaine at the bottom, not only are we accomplishing good detox, but we're also affecting that 5-hydroxytryptophan transporter molecule to help with the post-acute withdrawal syndrome. Before ibogaine treatment, objective opiate withdrawal scales. As you can see, these are 10 clients rated in order of frequency by observation. There's a lot of circles filled in there. At 10 hours and 24 hours post-treatment, as you can see, significantly less. Ibogaine works for detox like no other drug I've ever seen. Take home notes. I know we're out of time. I'll be done in 1 minute. Ibogaine blocks opiate withdrawal and cravings. Noribogaine accounts for the blockade of opiate withdrawal as a long-acting metabolite of ibogaine. Ibogaine prevents and reduces post-acute withdrawal through its effect on serotonin transporter and mu and kappa receptors. It is a relatively non-toxic, orally administered alkaloid with an analgesic antidepressant effect. It has a wide therapeutic index, with toxic doses being similar to those of aspirin and quinine. A single administration stops withdrawal symptoms, as evidenced by standard psychological testing. Ibogaine is a prodrug. Noribogaine offers a safe, effective alternative to ibogaine, so noribogaine merits further study. So just imagine a one-time-per-month patch or depot injection that would alleviate withdrawal symptoms, prevent cravings, and promote a general feeling of well-being in your client. Last slide, take-home message. The study of ibogaine and its active metabolite, noribogaine, represents a novel advancement in the field of addiction medicine. It's safe, non-toxic, orally active plant alkaloid with a wide therapeutic index. Ibogaine, the visionary component, is converted via cytochrome P450-2D6 in the liver to neuroibogaine. So, if you're unhappy with the effect that ibogaine has a visionary component, and I don't believe that Bill Wilson would be unhappy with that effect, nonetheless, noribogaine would not be psychoactive, but would still prevent withdrawal and post-acute withdrawal. Noribogaine is eliminated much slower than ibogaine, accumulating in the brain at pharmacodynamically relevant concentrations for weeks to months to prevent withdrawal, cravings, depressions, and post-acute withdrawal symptomatology. For those of you who are interested in more information about this, please come to our workshop tomorrow morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Camlett. We're going to have a panel, and in the interest of time, I think we're going to, I'm sorry, hold off on questions for a little bit.